The only curling joke that I know is off of that silly meme that's on social media right now about the how do you keep bacon from curling?
I don't know.
Take away their little brooms.
It's pretty good.
It's not bad.
You're listening to Stonecast, Curling in the Twin Cities, with Jordan Wickland and Christopher Lisney.
Today we are interviewing John Benton, Director of Curling Operations at the Four Seasons Curling Club in Blaine. If you want to send us feedback, go to our website, stonecast.rocks, click on the About Us button, and fill out the form to send us a message. This last weekend, which was Mother's Day weekend, a really cool thing happened at the St. Paul Curling Club. The Twin Cities Curling Association hosted their inaugural Metro Club Championship, which they have yet to name. But it was a cool competition between four local curling clubs, Chaska, Blaine, Frogtown, and St. Paul. Four top teams from each of these clubs competed for ultimate glory and ultimate camaraderie and whatever. I was lucky enough to curl two games on Saturday as a substitute on Peter Stoltz's team. It was actually kind of funny because I get off the ice this one time to take a drink of beer, and Dex looks over at me and he says, "What the hell are you doing here?" And I said, "What are you talking about? This is supposed to be the best of the best." And he said, "Yeah, exactly. What are you doing here?" Anyways, Mark Wilmert posted the results today on the Twin Cities Curling Association Facebook page. And as it turns out, the club competition was won by St. Paul with 12 points, followed by Frogtown with 9 points, Four Seasons with 6.5 points, and Chaska with 5 points. The team finals consisted of two St. Paul teams, the Farbelow rink versus the Owens rink, with Farbelow's rink ending up with a victory. So next year, I think that they're going to host the event at Four Seasons Curling Club in Blaine, so it should be a good time next year, as it was this year. So thanks, TCCA, for organizing it. What a great time. And now to the main event, the interview.
So we are here with John Benton, Director of Curling Operations at the Four Seasons Curling Club in Blaine.
Thanks for coming on our podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. No, you're official. You got your Fogarty Arena jacket on.
I literally texted Christopher back and said, "Can I just come back?" Because I didn't leave that long ago.
Well, you actually left. I thought you were here.
No.
No. Well, thank you for coming back.
Absolutely.
That makes me feel special.
It's my pleasure.
So I spent a lot of time out at the ice in St. Paul. John's name is on the wall. Junior in some, it must be like 2011, 2012.
I can tell you were paying attention.
Wow. Do we have to go there? I suppose we do. That was 1987. Junior state champion.
Yeah. I was 3.
Thanks.
I graduated high school in 87 or 88, I think.
Yeah, so we're right around the same age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I noticed that, like, so...
As opposed to pup star over here.
Do you know who Tom Selleck is?
Are you kidding me? My my friend and teammate, Dana Roberts, tries to imitate Tom Selleck every Halloween when he shaves his beard and has a magnificent mustache.
Do you know that they used to have cameras where you would actually have to put film in it?
I remember doing that vaguely.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I talked some Bonspiel that I just visited, and you were there. But you have a kind of a heritage at St. Paul, right?
Oh, yeah. I have a pretty spectacularly large family. We're up to 13 kids, and I'm the baby of 13. At one point or another, all of the kids have curled. And that's because, long story short, kind of a Brady Bunch situation. Both sets of parents were curlers at the St. Paul Curling Club. So we all got the opportunity through our parents to curl in the junior program there. And yeah, it's run through and through our family for a very long time. And that's something that I consider to be standard in the sport, is a lot of legacies. You don't see it as much now because we're having so much growth and so many new people coming into the game, but I can see lots of people passing this on to their kids as we go forward. You want to know what the most disappointing thing is to me over the last few years? The fact that I'm so busy that I can't curl in St. Paul in leagues, because that's my home club.
Yep.
That's where I grew up.
You should make it happen.
I intend to. It's going to be really hard for me to get back down there.
I'll kick someone off my team. I need some help. Jason, I'm talking about you. No, I'm not.
Oh, he's Cabana Boy. We need Jason. Do you guys send subliminal messages throughout the podcast?
So this year in St. Paul, there was like 100-plus regular junior curlers. And I asked Regan about it, and she said that you guys have a pretty successful junior program that's growing.
It is, for sure. And I'd like to see our junior program be even further developed. It's been successful to the credit of, as usual, some pretty dedicated parents and volunteers. The difficult thing we're finding is, number one, there's a ton of options for kids these days, obviously. Number two, finding the right time in the schedule. So for St. Paul, years and years and years, it's been known Saturday mornings, that's junior curling. We've tried that here, and it's been a little hit and miss. So we're shooting around, you know, a little bit differently right now, trying to find the right niche. We're actually starting up a family league to allow parents and kids to come together, because one thing we're finding with as many new members as we have is kids that don't know other kids don't necessarily want to hang out or meet other kids that they don't know and participate in a sport together. So we're hoping that the family league will actually help introduce kids to each other and get them involved together, and the junior program can then grow organically out of that. One of the things that I love about junior curling, and when you look at other sports, how many other sports do you get to send your kids out for 2 hours, basically unsupervised when they're playing a game? And they have to figure it out all themselves. All the social interactions, the rules, the etiquette, all of that stuff. I mean, that I say a lot that juniors coming out of curling are different people than juniors coming out of any sport. I mean, I can take a teenaged curler and put him in a room full of adults and can expect that he's going to be able to hold a conversation with people and be comfortable. I do that with a hockey player or a softball player or whatever. It's not likely to happen, you know.
So like the coaching is different.
Yeah.
Because it's not in-game coaching, really.
No, they have to figure it out all on their own. So, I think it's an awesome thing.
As a junior curler and as somebody who has observed junior curling, do you know of any like big blow-ups that have happened, like just massive failures because you've got like a 14-year-old out there curling trying to deal with a tense situation?
So I throw myself under the bus with this question. And my teammates, Steve Jidla, Jeff Paleo, and Mike Lindholm will recall this story.
Way to lean into the mic.
Exactly. They'll love this when they hear this. So we were competing at the 1987 Junior National Championships, which was held in Medford, Wisconsin, one of my favorite places. Long story short, we were playing, I believe it was Massachusetts at the time, and we were up by 9 at the break. Because of our level of maturity or lack thereof, we self-imploded and ended up losing that game. We gave up, I think, 12 points in the remaining 5 ends to lose that game. So yes, I've seen implosions happen.
What happened though? What emotionally happened when that happened? Did you guys like get all like irritated and snippy at each other and start pointing fingers?
Well, so on that particular team, I was oldest, so you know, I was the skip, so I was expected to lead, and there was some dissension about that. A couple of the guys on the team, you know, like to give me crap for being so serious all the time. And you know, one thing leads to another. The more I try to assert myself, the more they, you know, kind of resist that and start not really paying attention to what's going on in the game. At one point, our coach, who's standing behind the glass, of course, he has nothing that he can do. He actually took 2 pieces of duct tape and put them on the glass and pointed at my 2 players on the front end as if to say, these are for you. It didn't end well.
I'd like to implement that policy occasionally.
We all would. One of my favorite etiquette rules that we read off here, I stole from online. It says, curling is not a democracy.
So, I thought you were going to say no duct tape on the glass.
Yeah, no.
That's pesky to get off.
Yeah. No, that was, seriously, that was, I've seen those implosions.
9-0, though?
Yeah.
Let's switch subjects a little bit. What about this, like, institution allows you to be hired as a director of curling? Like how is the organization put together? Like, you know, does the city hire you? Are you a Blaine employee? Like, how does that work?
So let's clarify this, because it's kind of where we started the conversation. First and foremost, the entire facility here has nothing to do with the city of Blaine, other than we sit on city land and we have a value in kind lease with the city of Blaine, which means that we just need to provide community-based programming in all facets of our business here. So Fogarty Arena is kind of the mothership of everything that happens here. So if you think of Fogarty Arena as kind of the parent company and Four Seasons Curling Club and now the new restaurant, which will be Sticks and Stones.
Wait a minute. Regan told me that she would name it the Stonecast Pub.
Stonecast
Pub. We thought it was going to be Stonecast Pub.
She said, yeah, we're going to call it Stonecast, and the only obligation is that you have to do your podcast here once a week.
And we said that's doable.
Yeah, and I said I'd totally do it if we have access to the weight room, and two, if we get our free bar bill.
Going to get huge.
Wow. You don't ask for much.
Well, so anyways.
So anyway, the whole point being that Fogarty Arena is kind of the parent company of everything that happens here. We're a private nonprofit entity, which means we're a 501c3, and all of the revenue that's generated by the facility, whether it's through hockey, curling, or now the bar and restaurant, comes back into the facility. And the main idea behind that is that all of that revenue goes to pay for resurfacers, goes to pay for ice scrapers for Todd, goes to pay for potentially an RO, reverse osmosis water system for Todd, all to make the facility better and keep all of the costs static or low where they are. Very, very simply put, if we put it in terms of hockey, you're paying about a third of the price that somebody would on, say, the East Coast or West Coast for hockey, or even in northern Minnesota. We have a couple of very strong youth hockey organizations, Blaine and Spring Lake Park, who are actually, in one sense, they're the owners of the facility. So about 30 years ago, they built the original hockey arena for Blaine and Spring Lake Park youth hockey so that they would have a place to practice and play. Hmm. And that was all done by hockey parents, volunteers. A lot of sweat equity was put into the building. Over time, they added another hockey sheet, and kind of on a whim, one of their board members had grown up in northern Minnesota and had curled and had kind of facetiously said, you know, we should do curling.
Who was that board member?
I believe that was John Bauer.
From Bauer Hockey.
Yeah, sure. No, John's...
that's what I thought.
John's still on the board. He's been here forever. He's very integral to a lot of the things that happen at the board level here. But long story short, of course, they ended up making the decision to do curling. And I think that those discussions, once they started becoming serious, there were probably some people who were like, wait a second, curling, really? Mm. The other unique aspect,
profitable sport, as yeah, we all know.
The other unique
aspect. Find it on ESPN, the Ocho.
The Ocho. The other unique aspect is the fact that they didn't really have a membership. Most times when we've heard of, you know, dedicated facilities being built in the last few years, it's because there's been a group of people without a home. They've been playing on arena ice or something of that nature, and there's been kind of a, you know, a base. This place didn't have that. They were taking a shot in the dark, and it was partly my fault. They asked me to come in and talk to the board about what the possibility was. And I said, well, if you look around at the market, especially in the Twin Cities, you know, St. Paul's been sitting at, you know, over 1,000 members for a very long time and bursting at the seams, basically had a waiting list. You've had the Edina group kind of looking around for a home for a long time, Eden Prairie and Bloomington, and there were a number of potential locations for that group, and that didn't come to fruition. Frogtown spun off from St. Paul, so it just to me, I said, you know, with the 2014 Olympics coming up, if you were to build a place, market it well, staff it right, basically, you know, make it this bright, shiny new object, I think you could fill it pretty easily. And thank God it actually happened that way. Otherwise, I'd look pretty silly. But I was fortunate enough to gain their trust. And from that point, they said, well, if we do that, we're going to need somebody to run it. So then we started talking about, you know, salary and all of those kinds of things. And walking away from a 16-year career in the IT industry was not the easiest choice, especially, you know, I was making pretty good money and they're treating me very well here. I will say that, but I get to do what I love. So when we started, we had an original group of volunteers who formed a traditional club board, which was separate from the board of directors of the facility. So we were kind of going down that road.
Which is a divergent road.
Yeah, it was almost just assumed that that's the way it would work. And so, you know, Nick Wellen, who curls in both clubs now, Kevin Edwards, Eileen Bach, there were a number of people, Tim Bachmeyer, who were involved. And of course, I was hired as the director of curling. So I was kind of the go-between the curling club board and the facility board. So we had a curling club board, the facility board, we had the restaurant. We had a lot of moving parts when we first opened up. And to nobody's fault, it became just an untenable situation where it was unreasonable for us to think that a volunteer board who had their own jobs and their own lives would be able to have enough visibility into what was going on to a multifaceted business that was open basically 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day of the week, that they could make good decisions about what needed to happen here. It didn't make sense anymore. And so it's been a kind of a bone of contention for people and some questions that came to us. So we ended up dissolving that board, and we now have an advisory group that sits on the hockey board. And the intention is when curling becomes kind of fully vested here, there'll be club members who become part of the board, voting members as part of the board, which makes more sense in kind of the structure of things. But I wanted to throw that out there because it was a difficult time early on for us. And, you know, I think that there's probably still some hurt feelings out there, but, you know, we had to make the decision that was best for the business.
If any of those people that have hurt feelings come to you and ask for a hug,
just say no.
No.
Jordan will give them a hug.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm a hugger. I gave Regan a hug out of the car.
The good thing is that, you know, we move on.
Yeah.
You know, and all of those people are still involved and still curling you know, the club.
That's got to be a really tough thing to do, though.
It was.
I mean, that's...
And you know, we've done a few things. I mean, we just at our club championships and end-of-the-year banquet initiated our Volunteer of the Year Award, and it kind of went back 3 years to 4 years to 2012 and, you know, made recognition of those people who were involved at first, because we wouldn't be sitting here if they hadn't been involved. So, it you know... It's hard, but, you know, those kinds of things happen, and like I said, you move on.
How many people have you played cribbage with?
I have played cribbage with many people.
Do
you play cribbage?
I do.
Wonderful.
I do. As a matter of fact, the last time I played cribbage was at the St. Paul International with Matt Fowler and his, yeah, she's his girlfriend. I think I can say that here. So,
are they engaged?
Well, no.
No.
Are they Facebook
official?
Have they played cribbage together?
No, they're podcast
well,
official.
Well, here's the thing. We played three-handed cribbage. And let me tell you, his girlfriend is a shark. We did not win a single hand. But yes, it's very much a curling activity.
She can peg.
Yes. And luck with the cards.
You heard it here first. It was all luck. That's what that was. All luck.
Well, you know, cards is never about luck. What were you saying, Jordan? You were saying something before the cribbage point.
Oh, that you can travel in this sport and meet like-minded people no matter where you are.
That's it's probably my top thing, right? When when people talk to me, they want to talk about the Olympics and running this place and being able to do curling for a living. But when I'm like just talking to people about curling, I talk about what I consider my curling family, which just keeps growing and growing and growing. And, you know, I had the good fortune to be able to go out to California, to Orange County, to a wine country. Now I've been to Arizona to do like mini clinics for clubs out there or participate in spiels. And the enthusiasm for the game is like out of this world. And the people thrive on what we're talking about, which is the culture. You know, and a lot of people correlate it to drinking, but it's not that in my mind. It's a different social nature. And one of my favorite things is how randomly funny everyone in curling is. There's something about being random and being a curler that's significant because it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. People, you know, you don't hear people tell canned jokes. They just get silly and start being random as curlers, which I love.
I really gravitated to curling because one reason I grew up playing fairly competitive tennis here in Minnesota. And when you double fault, there's nothing else to do except grab two more balls and you have to serve again.
Right.
You have to overcome it immediately. So you end up kind of competing against yourself more than anything else. But the interesting thing about curling is that it's a solitary thing where you're the only one throwing the stone. You're the only one with your particular technique or your particular likes and dislikes about the ice or what's called and what's not called. But it is a team sport, and you still have to participate as a team member. And whether you miss or whether your opponent misses, or excuse me, your teammate misses, there's a social aspect that you have to kind of respect and be a part of, because you can't do it by yourself. You can throw 16 perfect stones and lose if the rest of the team isn't helping you out or responding. It's just so interesting.
You can throw 16 shots to the 12 foot or through instead of a guard, as I substituted on his team once. And I was playing lead and I could not do I have no idea what happened. I just couldn't throw a guard for the life of me.
Well, yeah, you were 3-8 on the stopwatch.
Every single one, they timed it. And then I was like, they were like, okay, I'm gonna slow down now.
You got that slide calibrated.
When I started curling last year, the thing that I liked is, I run a small business, and you don't think about team dynamics or leadership or anything like that. I mean, you do. Some people do. I don't, I guess. I just think about the product and making sure I take care of people and that kind of thing. But curling, you got to have a consistent shot. You got to listen to people. You know, you have to defer your judgment to somebody else who's making, and you have to be okay with some failure. And there's all these like little life lessons that are like business lessons that I'm like, holy cow, that's cool. I'm concentrating on some of the wrong things, perhaps.
So if you're going to sum that up in one word, what would it be?
One word?
Who's interviewing who here, John? Well, come on.
This is a coach in me coming out because you start talking like this, we could go on for hours.
I have no idea. One word? I was going to – let's see. Well, that's leadership, right?
Parity.
Camaraderie? No.
I think John has an answer. And he's
I do.
We
I do. I love doing this to people because they just itch and twitch.
I'm not twitching. What would you say the one word is?
Trust.
You know what? That is a very good word. It is trust. And a lot of times in businesses, our business struggles from trust.
Right. Yeah. So when I say that, most people go, well,
I get 100%.
I get part of it. But there's things like you were talking about where how do I know that when I miss two consecutive shots, my teammate is not going to completely unravel on me, either start missing shots themselves or blow up at me and we're standing on opposite ends of the ice and now this is really not any fun anymore. That element of the social interaction of the game at all levels, whether it's juniors, whether it's a world level team, a club level team, that's what you're talking about. And now you start talking about trust, you know, from a different perspective. I have a saying, and I'm actually likely to write a book around this, which is a million points of trust when it comes to curling. From the time that your skip's broom hits the ice, There's about a million questions that get asked and answered by your team in a millisecond. And it's all surrounding trust. Has he called the right shot? Do we know the right line? Do I know how to throw the shot? Have I practiced enough? All of these questions, right? And you're really just working really hard as a team and individually to eliminate all that doubt, to take care of all of that question so that you have complete trust in what's going on. And if you've ever played successfully in any sport, but especially in curling, when it's going right, there's no doubt. You get in the hack and you go, I know this shot. And your sweepers don't have to say anything, and the skip doesn't really say much. He puts the broom down, calls the shot, you make it.
I think what I heard there is also, am I mature enough to fail and to keep going in light of that failure? Right. I think it's one of those life lessons that, or the even business lessons that...
But what's the failure? Like, you learn from failure, and are you curling? Like, I don't have any illusion, although it'd be great, that I'm going to be, like, a national-level curler, or I'm going to be, like, in the Olympics, or anything like that. Like, I probably will...
You'll probably get there.
Yeah, I probably will. But, like, so what's the point of my curling? I want to be a better curler. I don't want to miss the broom. I don't want to miss a shot. I want to be really good. I want to be known for being consistent that way. But really, I'm just enjoying myself. So the failure, in my mind, is, like, if you miss a shot, people miss shots. It's no big... It shouldn't be a huge deal. You should just move on, and then it should be like, how do I continue the game and be competitive and enjoy myself? And so a failure would be not enjoying myself.
And that will happen, right? And unfortunately, you don't have control over all the moving parts. And so you can create a situation for yourself where you're not enjoying it because, you know, you're grinding away or you know, you can't let something go. But your teammates can also cause that to be an issue, right? So it's a learned process. You develop as a team, whether you even know that you're developing it or not, communication styles, likes, dislikes, all of that kind of stuff.
John, thanks for coming over and talking about curling. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. I enjoy talking about curling, as most people know.
I also enjoy talking about curling.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Good time. Thanks, guys. It was fun.
Ask that question about the one word.
Are you serious?
Trust.